Best Leaves Clues podcast with Robin Bailey and Al McDonald. Have you ever wondered what makes someone successful? What are they doing that's different? How do they achieve greatness? We believe that success leaves clues. In this series, we are interviewing very successful people from different walks of life to hear their stories. We'd like to remind our listeners that the views expressed in this podcast are those of our guests and not necessarily those shared by our hosts. Today's episode is sponsored by Life and Legacy Advisory Group. Discover our commitment to our clients. At Life and Legacy, building wealth, securing your family's future, giving back, and creating a lasting legacy are not just values, but a way of life. Let us guide you toward a future aligned with what matters most to you. We're also brought to you by Aria Benefits. If you're a business leader challenged with talent attraction, employee engagement, or supporting mental health, we can help. Use your benefits package as the key to unlock your workforce. Now here's your hosts, Robin Bailey and Al McDonald.
Welcome back to the Success Leaves Clues podcast. I'm your host, Robin Bailey, back at it again with my amazing co-host and business partner, Al McDonald. Al, third one up today. We were having some good conversations so far.
Yeah, and I expect that this will be no different. I'm looking forward to it. It's an interesting topic that we're going to explore. So yeah, I'm looking forward to this one as well.
Well, without further delay, today we're excited to welcome Jonathan DePasquale, president of Instant Risk Coverage. Jonathan, thanks for joining us. Great to have you on the show.
A pleasure, guys. Thank you so much for having me.
Yeah, I loved our first phone call so much. And, you know, we do those calls just to make sure, you know, this is someone I want to talk to. And about a minute into our conversation, I knew, okay, great rapport with this person. Let's have him on the show. So I'm glad you could join us. I wanted to dive right in, right? Because when we were chatting the last couple of years, wow, what a weird experience we all lived through. But it was particularly interesting. And I want to share that with our audience. How did COVID impact your business? And maybe you can talk about some of the adjustments you had to make during that time.
Yeah, COVID was a very interesting time for our business. We were going into it realizing in 2020 that we were going to be launching this business publicly available for everyone to utilize. We had spent a full year trialing it out, 2 years developing the product, and we're so gung-ho to hit the ground running. And you know what? We're like, Q1, let's give ourselves a little bit of a break. Just make sure all the wheels are turning the right way. And March 1st, we're going to launch this thing and it's going to be great. I remember we launched it March 1st. We were pumped about the business. And I was in Ottawa and we were starting to hear whispers about COVID. And I was like, oh, well, it's elsewhere. It's really not going to come here. And then March 15th hit and, oh, we're closed for 2 weeks. I'm like, okay, no worries, everyone. We can readjust the plans on this big launch that we're doing and adjust the business. And then it just turned out the next 2 years we were building this business in COVID. So it was quite interesting, but it created some great resilience in the team. But during it was so hard. We were running a business, generating income, and then being really good at just refunding everything that we were generating to everyone. I think we became account receivable and payable specialists more than insurance specialists than anything over that time. But it gave us the opportunity to really develop a really cool product and sort of propel us down the direction that the business is built out now. And it's a very different business than we initially thought about.
Can you tell us a little bit about that? Because I know you and I chatted about that in our first call. And I think it's an interesting story. So I'd love if you could share some more of that.
Yeah, no, absolutely. When we were rolling out the business, we had a mentality of building a product that was focused around specifically event insurance. Building an event insurance platform, insurance partner during COVID. You can imagine how that went. It was an outstanding experience. But when we were in COVID, we realized, you know what? There's so many different types of activities now that are coming out. Pickleball also exploded into the scene. And I remember being in our office online saying, we insure pickleball now. I don't care how we figure it out. We are going to be a pickleball insurer. We were doing curling and we started adding different sporting activities. We realized, you know, we can support vendors that are in the space that are doing little pop-ups. And it just created such a diverse insurance product that we're able to roll out. And then fast forwarding out of COVID into 2023, the product all of a sudden blew up. Everyone realized, wow, this is such a refined product for the space. It's thinking about all these little elements that were forgotten. And next thing we knew, we were doing seven figures.
So Jonathan, who typically is a client of yours and why would they come to you to buy your product and get the insurance?
Yeah, so we have a very different model here. So our client is actually the venue versus having the person that's coming in running the event. So the venue brings in our services. We build an online solution with them and we plug it into their booking software. And then what they do is they send the people utilizing their space, which is their client and what we refer to as our users, to purchase the insurance, pay for the insurance, process everything. So it's automatically filed in the venue's side. So the venue is getting the benefit of facilitating the insurance product and benefiting the product, but financing it through the customers.
So it sounds like you've made this a lot more streamlined and a lot easier for the end user because they don't have to worry about A, if they even forgot about getting insurance, and B, if they remembered to get it, they would have to jump through all the hoops. It sounds like you've made this a rather seamless journey for both the venue and the end user that, hey, you've just plugged this in and made their life easier. Is that kind of what I'm hearing?
100%. So we've been working on it. It used to take you about a minute to get through our platform. And then we realized, you know, that was a little bit too quick. So we built out the platform. It was more cumbersome over the last few years. And we realized, okay, consumers were going through the platform in 5 minutes. And now we're working to get that down to 3 minutes. But the idea is you can pick up your phone, you can show up at the venue. And even though you're showing up last minute, you can still make sure that space is fully insured and it's just going to meet all the venues required.
So I would love to hear a little bit more about your personal journey and how you made the leap into insurance. Like, what is it that drew you to this field?
Oh, well, like any good insurance partner in the space, I was doing something completely different and then naturally fell into it. My background actually comes from marketing. So I was working with companies like Pepsi, Diageo, and we're building out experiential marketing experiences. And so we're utilizing vent spaces, doing things on the street. And we always had insurance as a piece of it. And to be transparent with you guys, it was a nightmare. My time at Diageo, we had about 3,500 events a year that we had to make sure were properly insured. And we were passing the roles and responsibilities to different team members and no one could get it right. And eventually I said, you know what? I will do it. I can figure it out. And then I screwed it up. And I realized, you know what, maybe there's something here. And talked to a buddy of mine that I went to post-secondary with. And he's like, you know what, we can build a digital platform. We can facilitate this way. And he built something digital. I realized, oh my God, this is real. And I flew to the UK and started begging underwriters to trust us. And for some reason, after 2 weeks, a handful of them decided to subscribe and trust us on a product. And we ended up rolling it out. And all of a sudden, I found myself in the insurance space, operating at MGA.
So tell us a little bit about when you said I was begging underwriters to work with us. What was that like? Sounds like an adventure.
Oh, it was a great experience. Imagine a 24-year-old at the time running around all of Canada at first, asking all these insurance markets, hey, we have a great insurance idea. We can digitalize it. It's going to be touch-free for everyone involved. No one wanted to touch it. And we're like, okay, you know what? We'll go to the US and someone will trust us there. And we got squashed there. And so our final Hail Mary on getting the insurance product was like, let's go to where it all happens. And we went to Lloyd's London, met with some syndicates, begged them to introduce us to some entities. And after 2 weeks' time, we managed to group a good chunk of them together to get them to all subscribe around 10 to 20% on a master policy style document. And then take a product into Canada and became sort of a Lloyd's partner that way.
You know, Jonathan, I'm just thinking about your journey and starting a new venture is never easy. I mean, we talked to a lot of them on this podcast, right? And have those conversations. And thankfully, a lot of them stick with it and they end up doing well. But most of them talk about in the beginning how hard it was and you want to pull your hair out. You know, you wondered why you started. But I think in particularly in an insurance that wasn't well served and really wasn't much around it and was very challenging, that in particular would have been really hard. And I'm sitting here wondering, how do you go about building trust and community and credibility within that community for something that maybe didn't have the greatest reputation back then? Like, how do you go about doing that?
It comes back to transparency. And I think the biggest thing, especially in the insurance industry, but it falls for almost every industry, is your word's worth more than any dollar. So if you can build a relationship with someone, hey, throughout this whole process, we screwed up many a times, but every time we would own it. And we still have that thought process as an organization today. We'll go to our insurance market and say, hey, we made a mistake on how something operates. And that transparency has led to building a group with us that our insurance markets trust us, our brokers trust us, our venue clients, they trust us because they know that we're going to be transparent. And I think that was the biggest thing that was very beneficial to us is I went to London and I said, hey, we have some clients that are interested, but no one's committed and signed a document. Like, you are taking a risk on this, but right now you're taking a risk on something. And this is how we're going to operate the whole book and business. And we're not going to deviate from it. And we're going to build this with you. And a lot of those partners are still involved in the insurance products we do today, or they've brought in new products that they want us to facilitate digitally as well.
As you're chatting about, you know, I think that's really important that you brought up accountability, because I've experienced two different scenarios many, many times over our career, but two recently that I'm thinking of. And one was a, let's call them a vendor partner of ours, really screwed up. And I went back to them, let's fix this. The very first conversation was, hey, I think you guys have to take some blame for this as well. And it became a conversation of, let's blame everyone else except for us. And I'm just trying to get things fixed. And the feeling that I walked away with was kind of yucky, right? And I don't think there'll be future opportunities for us to work together. And then there's the other scenarios where people own up, you know what? That's on me or that's on us. Let's figure out how we can make the client whole, make everybody happy. But afterwards, let's sit down and make sure this doesn't happen again because something went off the rails here. That's a company or a person that I'm going to work with probably over and over again because they took accountability. And I find, I mean, there's always going to be unreasonable people that you're going to deal with. But I find for the most part, as long as you take accountability for the actions that you've taken and you say, hey, I'm going to work to fix this and provide a solution, very few people are going to hold a grudge and be mad at you. And those can turn into some great relationships, right? So I think that's a really valid point. And when we talk about success leaves clues, I'm sure people listening to this are going to go, ah, okay, you got to own up to your mistakes and that accountability. I think there's a very powerful, we have it as one of our guiding principles. Some people might call them values, but that's certainly one of ours. And we've seen the power of it within our own company as well. So I'm really glad you brought that up.
For sure. Mistakes don't drive away business. It's accountability.
Exactly right. Yeah.
And how you manage those mistakes. In-house, we always make a joke, don't waste a good crisis. So when someone makes mistakes, that's it's an opportunity to build a relationship with a client further. Whether it's their mistake, our mistake, we want to be involved in that process.
I like that. I think I'm going to steal it, put it in my repertoire.
Perfect.
Something that you've alluded to already, but I want to explore maybe a little bit more depth. And you brought this up on the original phone call that we talked about when you said you launched this business, COVID hit immediately, you turned into having to refund people an awful lot of money because you had contracts and then you obviously couldn't deliver because there just wasn't anything to deliver on. Talk about, like, a lot of companies maybe either A, wouldn't have done that or couldn't have done that because they wouldn't have had the money. They would have been broke. So can you talk a little bit about A, how you accomplished that, but B, the effects that that had? Because I'm thinking that in the long term, that must have really, going back to what we just talked about, built your trust and credibility with clients.
100%. And I'll be transparent with you guys. When we were doing those refunds, we didn't have the money. Like, we had to extend out the line of credit, but it was a decision that we made that we saw other competitors in our space at the time weren't doing. Mm-hmm. And we made the call that it's the right thing to do. And you know what? If it drives the company into the ground, at least we're leaving knowing that we have a good relationship in the space and we can return or we can spool something else back up. But it wasn't right to withhold money and not refund it to people who couldn't have their events. All the partners that weren't refunding money in the space, I'll be transparent with you guys, don't exist anymore. So I think we maybe made the right call. Mm-hmm. But when we came back, that's where all of a sudden we hit the ground running. We had a lot of brokers approach us and say, hey, we've heard great things about you guys in the space, how you take care of clients. You operate a little bit less traditionally than a normal MGA where you're more involved in the conversations. We want that. And that goes back into our mantra at the company. It's like, you can't go to IRC's website and book event insurance with us or do anything direct. We always work through our broker partners. And it's because we focus on building up those relationships. So yeah, we refunded hundreds of thousands of dollars. And at the moment I was like, oh my God, I don't know if this is a good call, but it was, looking back at it, I wouldn't have hesitated for a moment. It was one of the things that defined us different than the space. And it actually left a good insurance taste in people's mouths for once versus what everyone was sort of experiencing at that time.
Yeah. And listen, I'm in the insurance industry and you still hear there's a lot of bad stories.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the perceptions around insurance in general is, hey, I pay. And then when it comes time for me to collect, there's a reason that the insurance company kind of weasels out of it. So, I mean, that perception is out there for sure. And the fact that you have walked your walk and talked your talk and backed up things, I think that goes a long way.
Yeah, it's come to also us bringing it into claims management. When we have a client who has a claim, most MGAs, most brokers, claim comes in, we'll let the adjusters deal with it. We'll tackle that down the road. We're actually very involved in the process because we'd like to protect our book of business, but we also want it to react. If we're not actually paying claims, why are people buying the insurance?
Right.
And so some of our biggest clients have actually had massive claims and then they've said, hey, I've had a great experience. They've brought more business in and we've covered off that claim that way.
Yep. And I'll give a big shout out to our third partner who is not on this podcast, Joe. He is great at advocating for the client in, he deals a lot in the disability insurance and critical illness field. And he is great at advocating for the client when they have to make a claim. And I know that the feeling that it leaves with the client that they've got someone in their corner. So we've seen that ourselves in action. And I'm sure that that has served you very well, as you've just talked about.
100%. It's great. It is the one call that I think everyone getting into the space should focus more on because you get a lifelong client that way.
You know, on this podcast, Jonathan, we talk with a lot of people and, you know, we talk about lessons learned, right? And you, when you're looking back, and hindsight's always 20/20, and it's interesting to see some of the decisions you made. And looking back at the one you made during COVID to refund all that money, it's obviously paid off and earned you some credibility in the business. But looking back for yourself, are there any valuable lessons you've learned both as a leader and entrepreneur that you can share with us?
Absolutely. I think a big one in the space is people don't really realize how important it is to take care of your people in your organization. And I think that's something that's especially neglected in the insurance space, especially smaller brokerages or mid-sized brokerages don't treat their people necessarily well, or they're not sort of building a roadmap for their success. And this is an industry that's really hard to retain talent, right? People naturally want to jump to the next thing because they feel like their growth is limited. And something that we learned, and it was learned by mistake, is we didn't initially build up our people up for success. We've changed our mantra internally and how the company operates. Anyone that comes in, there's a 2 to 5 year success plan. We walk them through and say, this is where we want to get you. This is how the company operates. This is the roles we see you in. Because we go with the mentality when we make a hire, we want to retain that person for the next 3 to 4 years at a minimum, right? Especially young talent, because you bring in talent to insurance, everyone's sort of fiending over them, especially if they're really good. That's something that we missed on when we first started this business, is we were just so focused on the end goal of we need to generate revenue, we need to build a healthy book of business, that we actually initially neglected our first few people that we hired. And we realized there was a problem with that and we made an adjustment. And now we focus so much on retention and building up the company around team members and giving them the ownership, which I think is extremely important. And that's what's developed our business to being the headcount it is now.
It's a really good point about having a path, right? Especially for those younger employees.
Sure.
I think one of the worst things that can happen is, hey, I'm here. Where do I go from here? And you don't have an answer, right? And especially we can take that further as your company matures. I think you're going to find that we find this in companies that employees need to feel channels of promotion are not blocked. So having those steps for each level of employee to move, oh, I'm moving up here. So now that younger employee sees that path of where they can move to, I think that's really important. Can we go back to the beginning of the conversation though? Because I'm very curious about this. And this is for a selfish reason, because I'm always looking for biohacks and what other people are doing. During the pandemic, during that time, I imagine that was a really stressful time for you. Anyone who tells me that their mental health wasn't challenged during the pandemic, I'm going to call a little bit of BS on you, because everyone I know, myself included. What do you do in those times where you hit the wall and you're just like, oh my gosh, this is so stressful, I got to get away? What works for you?
Yeah, I think the biggest trap that I initially fell into is during the pandemic, I was working 7 days a week, 24/7, like I kid you not. It would be from 8 a.m. to probably 11 p.m., maybe sometimes 2 a.m. every day. There was no break in between. And what I realized I'll be honest, it took about a year into the pandemic. I was just becoming less and less productive because I was so burnt out. And something that I've adopted now is there's one day a week, we'll call it Sunday, the laptop doesn't come open. The phone is not open. Yes, we operate 24/7 as a business. That is the one day that I step away. I do something that is a hobby to me. I get outside. I don't want to be thinking about this space. And I know I've put the other 6 days into it, so it's healthy enough that I can take that one day. Just to give myself a little breathing room to reset my mental health. Because over the pandemic, I didn't realize, but I was getting myself into a darker, darker place, getting beat up more and more so. And people are afraid to talk about that. And everyone wants to say, hey, I came out of the pandemic in a better space. We did. But during the pandemic, it was rough. And for the first year, not having and building an outlet and being so hyper-focused on just trying to survive the business, it was the wrong call. I almost wish ahead of time I realized, you know what, take that Sunday, take that one Saturday. Doesn't matter what you do, but just don't get into work. Even if it was for 2 minutes, all of a sudden your head is thinking of it and you can't disconnect for hours.
Exactly. Yeah. Well, that day for me, I'm the same. 6 days a week. Sundays I do prepare because I love hitting Monday. You know, my Monday meetings all prepared. So I do about a couple hours on Sunday. But Saturday, my laptop, my promise to my wife is my laptop will not open. And over the years, Jonathan, I used to, you know, fly down on vacation and I would wear it as a badge of honor. Look at me. I've got my laptop on the beach and I'm on vacation. And my wife's looking at me like, what are you doing? And it took many years to finally realize, like, there's no honor in that. Like, take the vacation, take time away from the business. You'll be a much better, more productive person when you come back. Right. So I think that's important. And again, I think those type A personalities, those entrepreneurs, those drivers, it's very easy for them to do exactly what you were doing, working 24/7, 7 days a week. Look at me, look how hard I work. And I'm thankful that I think society is beginning to realize, like, there's no honor in that. Like, let's make sure we take time. Like, we had on Jeff Ruby, I believe his company's called Newtopia, on the podcast. And he was the first person that we had chatted about that he said, I prioritize sleep. And he had said, I think he was getting 9 or 10 hours a night. And he said, that way I am the best performer I can be at that level. And he says, there's no pride in me taking just 4 hours a night, right? So I think leadership is beginning to talk about these things more and more. So I'm very glad you brought that up. Now, we're going to switch gears a little bit. We're going to get a little more philosophical with you. And I'd love to hear, and this can be, I'll just remind you, this can be from a corporate standpoint for your business. This can be something personal. It can be a combo of the two. It's really entirely up to you. But Al, I'll let you take away your signature question.
Yeah, before we hop onto that, I do want to just go back and revisit what we were just talking about. And what you said about working sometimes till 11, sometimes till 2, I'm going to bet that in your mind, because I think we all do this, hey, the more I work, naturally, the more productive I am, right? If I work 8 hours, I'm productive X. If I work 16 hours, I'm productive 2X. That's simple math, right?
100%.
And I think we get trapped in it. I think we all have. I know I have. But it's that realization finally when you come to the conclusion, wait a second, it's not 2X. As a matter of fact, it's half X. So I think it's really good that you brought that up. I think we've all been there. That's why I wanted to come back to it. I think it's really important to kind of focus on that. And you're not working better just because you're working more. So yes, let's jump into it. So I want to pose a reflective question inspired by a beautiful proverb. A society grows great when old persons plant trees in whose shade they will never sit. So can you talk about what proverbial trees you are planting in your life or business that you hope will make an impact in the future?
Yeah, my tree, it's business related, but it also comes from a personal space. And this comes from when we were building this business, something that was very impactful that we went through was accelerator based in Toronto called Next Canada, which honestly is one of the things that set our business onto its trajectory. But building a strong Canadian business that's going to be based here, I want to build something similar to like a Shopify, something that is still home based here, known globally, but helps build up the Canadian economy. I want this company to far exist me. There'll be a time where I'm probably in a wheelchair. I don't even know who I am. And I want this company to still exist and still providing jobs and building what is a great industry here in Canada, but also projecting it globally and become something like that. So I want to build something that, hey, we got 1,000, 10,000 people that are employed here in Canada, writing, designing business that is globally and building sort of what is an insurance hub even further here. That's IRC almost sits as my tree. If that's where we end up and the event industry is better for it. The Canadian economy is better for it. And people local to my city across Canada are better for it. That's great.
I love that. And it's interesting that in the past, and Robin, you'll probably be able to relate to this, maybe in the past half dozen episodes, that has been a bit of a theme that we've talked with some people who've echoed that about the importance of, you know, a Canadian company and keeping jobs here and building something for the future that doesn't necessarily get sold to a bigger American or whatever, right? It's just interesting that we've had that theme a little bit more frequent lately. So I find that interesting.
I think it's very easy to get whisked away to the US, to Europe. I'll be transparent with you guys. I was in Austin and part of it was they were mean with us to talk about, be great to have you here. Be great to have a company based here. Maybe you guys should consider moving to the US. And that sounds great. And everything they say rings your ears. But then you forget about, hey, I grew up here. I want to build something that can allow other people to grow up here and actually grow the Canadian economy, continue with what is the Canadian dream. Like, you want people to see that benefit. And so a company like ours, we're not going to get whisked off to the US. We'll always go down and have those conversations. And Austin's a beautiful city. New York's a beautiful city. Like, these places are great and awesome insurance and tech hubs, but there's no reason why we can't replicate that stuff here. And so that's why I'm so focused on bringing it back. And I've watched similar founders of businesses, friends I've grown up with that create great business, and they've gone off to the US and they're enjoying it, but they've wound down everything that's to do in Canada. They just sell the product here. I don't want to do that.
I might have to ask the editor just to pipe in lightly between you and Al talking about Canada, you know, oh, Canada, just playing in the background as you guys, because it's such a prideful moment, like, go Canada, go. That's awesome to hear. For listeners who want to find out more about what you're doing, for brokers out there, want to find out more about you in general, because, you know, we've had a great conversation. What's the best way for people to reach out?
LinkedIn is most definitely the best way to reach out. You can find me at Jonathan DePasquale on LinkedIn. Or for the younger crowd, if you're on Instagram, no TikTok, unfortunately, it's johnd.ca. Both those platforms, I always respond to, answer any questions. I'm very involved in the startup community, so I do want to see younger businesses born, bred, grow in Canada. So if you have something and you want to get connected in, whether it's insurance related or not insurance related, I'm always happy to help and connect.
That is awesome. I really enjoyed this conversation. That does it for today's episode. If you have any questions for Al or myself, please feel free to give us a call or join in the conversation on LinkedIn. We saw it again here. Success leaves clues. We'll see you next time, my friends.